This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk about pets, baby. Let's talk about ticks and fleas. All the fun things that we see. Smart tips and tricks guaranteed.
Welcome back. We are here for another episode of Let's Talk About Pets. I am not just a myth from the sea. I'm also your host, Nessie.
I don't have anything fun to say. I'm just Echo. I'll repeat myself if you want an echo, though.
We have a special guest with us today. His name is Ben Lee. He has a business called Concerned Canines, where he specializes in dealing with aggression and anxiety. He is a professional dog trainer, knowledge assessed, member of the Association of Professional Dog Trainers and Pet Professional Guild. As of this month, he has been training for 10 years. Everybody, welcome Ben to the show.
Welcome, Ben.
Hello, everybody. How are you
today? Doing good. We have an interesting topic today. It is about dog aggression and whether there is such a thing as aggressive breeds or if all dogs have the potential to be aggressive. I thought it'd be interesting first to maybe mention a few dog statistics that I found as far as dog bites go. Do you guys want to hear those?
Yeah, let's go.
Definitely.
Approximately 334,000 people admitted to U.S. emergency departments annually for dog bite associated injuries.
Did you say 300,000?
334,000.
That's insane.
That seems low. I feel like it was low.
It was at least a reported one. That's not including like the smaller ones that may happen at home that you don't go seek help for because like, oh, it didn't break the skin as bad.
It's just an index finger. It's not swollen and green yet. I'm okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there.
Green is bad.
This is bad.
So actually, it's an unknown number of people who have sustained injuries and have not sought help. The demographics of typical dog bite victims, almost half typically are children under 12 years old, and at least 10% of them are 70 years old or higher. I did not include the fatality rate. One other fact is that dog bite costs the insurance an estimated $1 billion in homeowner liability claims a year.
Yeah, 80. This is Christoph. He's my student. Anytime I'm on a camera, he knows what my laptop does, but he thinks he's needed for class.
So yes.
He doesn't understand. We're just now. I feel like those numbers would be kind of low because, I mean, again, to kind of give you a little bit of context, we got our border collie in November of 23. My wife, who is a former dog professional, knew better. She was on the bed playing with him. He was in her face. He play bit her nose and he lacerated her nostril. Yeah, they just glued it back together. But we had to like fill out a bite report on an 8-week-old puppy. And they kept asking us questions. Do you feel like the dog is dangerous? And I'm like, I am a professional dog trainer. It's an 8-week-old puppy. It's a play bite. And I guess that's probably why I feel like, you know, you get bit once, you're not going to report it.
So have you guys had a dog bite at any point send you to an ER before?
Me personally, knock on wood, no. I had a couple that I probably should have seen a doctor for, but none that sent me to the ER. Now, my wife, the dog groomer, has, but I've never had one. I don't know, messy little bitch.
My worst bite was from a cat, actually. So not a dog. And I wound up out of work for a couple of weeks because it got infected like the night of. It was terrible. So I was like, well, the bite doesn't seem bad enough that I don't think I need help. And by the next day, I couldn't move my arm. It was so swollen and I had to get antibiotics and all the fun stuff. So mine was a cat. What about you?
Yeah, I had to go to the ER once from a treeing feist years ago when I was training. And this was just like a general level one adult basics course. And so it was all dogs that I hadn't met before at this feist had just been adopted the day before. It was an adult, so we didn't know anything about the history. I was putting his harness on at the end of the lesson and body language seemed relaxed. He seemed fine. I was about to clip it and he just turned and he grabbed my hand. and it put a nice big hole in the webbing in my fingers.
It was a wild
blood just pouring. It was
yep.
It was a lot of fun. I don't know if it's the same in every state, but I was living and working in Michigan at the time. And if you go to the ER for an animal bite, then it has to be reported. So I had to report that person, and she returned the class, and she was mad that I reported her. And I was like, I did not have a choice.
You know, here locally, yes, you do actually have to report it, because if you go to the doctor, they ask, do you know the dog that bit you? And I think my wife still had to get a tetanus shot because
I did too.
Our puppy, he was only 8 weeks old. But if you say, no, I don't know the dog that bit me, they'll put you through a rabies protocol.
Yes. Wondered about that.
And that will hurt. What kind of dog bit you?
It was a treeing feist.
I don't know that breed.
I don't know either. He was from a rescue, so I think it was a, I'm going to say this with air quotes, a treeing feist, because nobody knows what that breed is. That's not one of the most common dogs that you know, would run away and go and procreate accidentally. So I think it was just like, this dog kind of looks like this.
It's bred to hunt squirrels, and it's actually it's bred from terriers. So that tracks. I've heard the name feist before, but I've never seen one.
My next door neighbors were breeding mountain feists, I think. So they have a few.
Okay. Wow. This feels like we are ranging on some airbender territory here. The mountain feist, the tree feist, maybe the water feist in here somewhere, maybe.
The water feist. You would know more about that, Nessie.
Yeah.
I'm particularly fond of the fire feist.
Oh, yeah. I think Charmander when you say that.
Like it's not a dog, it's a Pokemon. So
that's great.
It's the new fire starter for the next generations.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you guys what your thoughts on whether or not you believe any dog has the potential to be aggressive, and your thoughts on if it's breed specific or not.
I'll go first. I do think that it is within the capabilities of anything with teeth to bite. I don't think that it ever is wise to underestimate the power of fear or stress. I do think that there are certain breeds that are far more prone to it, who have been bred for it and for specific jobs that require aggressive tendencies. On a rare occasion, I have met, you know, a very, very aggressive Labrador, a very, very aggressive Golden, which was very confusing. I've met really nasty English Bulldogs, and they're known to be really nice dogs.
I worked with one a couple of years ago, and it was one of those situations where it was just like, we're not going to figure out what is driving this dog's behavior. Every so often, AM just went off and hated other dogs. So it's kind of like an alligator. It's low to the ground. He gets a lot of traction. If it gets in his mouth, you're not getting it out of his mouth. It's going to be an ugly bite. I mean, because you know what bulldogs are bred for, though, right? A bulldog is meant to bite it was a sport called bull baiting, and it was meant to grab onto the cow's or the bull's face and go dead weight.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, a bulldog is a very scary thing. When it wakes up and chooses violence. Talking about like the dogs that are surprising. So I was telling Nessie earlier, I got bit yesterday by a Lhasa Apso.
That doesn't surprise me.
The dog that got me started as a dog trainer was actually a toy poodle. Our toy poodle. So that was the joke. Philip unfortunately passed away in April of 24. So we got Philip. He was around 9 months old and bit me, bit my wife a couple of times. Would frequently bite the vet. You did not mess around with him. I don't know if I ended up answering the question or not. So I agree with you completely. I go, yes. If it has a mouth, it'll bite. And if it's a dog, it'll definitely bite.
Oof.
Biting is a function in all canines. It's a very effective function, as we have learned over the years.
Are you of the belief that if it comes from the right type of upbringing, then it won't become aggressive, no matter the breed?
Yeah, I'd like to hear your take.
Look, you can raise a dog as friendly and as social and check all your boxes. There is a condition under which that dog will bite. So I like to call it the mystery variable, because you can't predict every variable in training. You can try and say, my dog is going to be in this situation. I'm going to get my dog comfortable with this situation, right? We have the Blue Angels flying over us all the time. The dogs who came to playgroup every day, the Blue Angels breaking the sound barrier over the hospital did nothing to them. The dogs that were new, they were startled. But I feel like there's always that possibility, because it's never a no. It's just a probability. The probability may be super low. I'll go back to my standard poodle. If you'll ever meet Christoph in person, he is more social than I want him to be. I don't like being this social with people. Kristoff's never met a stranger. Once he got comfortable and he felt safe, anybody I've introduced him to has been his new best friend. But he was at work with my wife one time while she was a groomer. A lady was getting kind of ugly with her, and he was on her table, I think. And he became so reactive towards this woman yelling at my wife that one of her coworkers had to go put him in a kennel. And he sat there scratching and going crazy at the kennel, trying to get to my wife. So in that situation, if Kristoff were between that lady and my wife, would he have bitten her? Maybe. But the probability is there.
Can I ask you something, Ben? So you work specifically with aggressive dogs, or do you just train like really anything?
I mean, I'll train. When you say anything, I did train our bitter bearded dragon a little bit. Yeah, I don't do like a dog sports, but I will do like basic obedience and everything. But my niche in the local environment is aggression and anxiety.
When you get specifically the dogs that, you know, the families are coming to you because of aggression, how often do you hear people say things like, well, he's not really aggressive, we just had a bad moment, but he's not really a bad dog? Is that common, or do people come to you being like, I know my dog's bad, help?
I would say probably about 30% of my clients come to me and they say, look, we've always had this problem, or we thought it would go away. And if you're listening at home, it will not go away. If you have a dog that is growling or biting, I don't care if it's an 8-week-old puppy, go ahead and seek out a professional help. Now, you know, shameless self-promotion, I do online classes. But I would say that most of it is always a surprise. We didn't know he was going to bite. The bite came out of nowhere. I start interacting with the dog and I'm seeing micro behaviors. I'm seeing small, subtle shifts in the dog's behavior. And I'm going, this is not surprising. This dog was telling you 5 minutes ago, I'm thinking about biting you. And you just kept pushing, you just kept pushing. And then you probably get that 5-10% of clients who they know it's going to happen. They just keep dealing with it, doing not intelligent stuff. I consulted on a case once where the owner kept putting their face in the dog's face while the dog was sleeping. And this is horrible. If you're listening at home, please do not do this when your dog is sleeping. There is an old adage in the country, less sleeping dogs lie. It is considered wisdom for a reason. And he was like, well, what do I do to keep my dog from biting me on the face? And I was like, well, this is easy. Don't stick your face in your dog's face while he is sleeping. And he goes, well, the dog is just so cute. I did that. Take a picture. Take a picture.
Yeah.
Okay. Put it on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok and be like, look how adorable my dog is. Heart eye, heart eyes. And this was a big dog, and it was a breed known for being like a biting breed. And the answer was just don't stick your face in his face.
I mean, seems like a simple solution, but you know, sometimes it's amazing what like obvious things do not always occur in the moment.
Especially when it comes to like dogs. And this is something that I've been harping on for a couple of months. I feel like dog culture in general, I feel like we're losing our ability to with dogs, which is ironic because from a biological standpoint, we have been domesticating dogs for at least 20,000 years. There is some evidence that we have been domesticating dogs for up to 40,000 years. And there's even like other branches of humanity, like Neanderthals maybe did some domestication processes. Maybe they had some like proto wolves. And it's just ironic that it feels like the past 15 years, we have lost our ability to really read and understand dogs. And that's troublesome. I mean, it's not a big deal if you've got a chihuahua, a toy poodle, or you go and find this cute little fluffy thing at the shelter who's 10 pounds. That bite might put you in the hospital for a couple of sutures. It's not going to be a life-threatening bite. I watched a movie and now I want a Malinois. That dog can and will hurt you at some point. It may be unintentional. And if you don't know what you're looking for, if you don't know how to read a dog,
yeah,
you're going to end up getting hurt, even if it was an unintentional thing. To us who work in the animal field, this is common sense.
Right.
But for Joe Blow, two parents, 2.5 kids, they're both working 40-hour job. You have extracurriculars with your kids and everything like that. This isn't common sense because we're not working on the farm anymore. Now, my border collie's never seen sheep except on TV. So it's not like I'm going outside and that's how I'm making my living in it. I tell owners all the time, I ask questions in my intake form. Have you ever used a shock collar, a prong collar, a panty can, a spray bottle, whatever? Because I need to know what you tried. And I'm not holding this against you. This isn't your fault. You're trying. But it's not common knowledge anymore about what to do with dogs.
I think a lot of that has to do with people picking breeds for the look of it. They like that the dog may look intimidating, but they don't have enough experience in owning a breed to socialize it or get it the proper training, and they wind up not being able to handle the dog when it becomes a grown-up. That might be part of the problem with dog culture as well.
Do y'all remember a couple of years ago when Game of Thrones started getting big, how many huskies, German Shepherds, and the name is Arya, Sansa, Khaleesi. We saw such a huge influx of people getting these dogs that look like wolves. That's cool. I mean, look, a husky is a beautiful dog. It's meant to run 40 miles a day. And if you're here in Florida, if you're anywhere like really kind of like south of, I would say like Michigan, you probably should not be having, if you don't get measurable snowfall every year, it's really too warm for your husky. And, congratulations, there's 3 foot of snow outside. Your husky's ready to go for a 40-mile run. Are you?
Right.
And it's not an apartment dog. It's not a suburban dog.
Yeah, but, you could just shave them and then they're no haul.
I'm so glad my wife can't hear this.
This is being said by a groomer too, Nessie.
Well,
joking.
Yeah, don't shake your husky's toes.
No. That's not the solution.
But yeah, I think that's part of it is, oh, look, that's a really beautiful dog. I really want one.
Like when 101 Dalmatians became popular,
I would be wanting what that to have Dalmatians.
Yes. They're more a one-person dog than a family dog.
Yeah.
They are not like the dogs that are displayed in the movie. Dalmatians don't usually behave like that.
Do you know the history behind the Dalmatian? What it was bred for? The Dalmatian was a coach dog. That's the reason the Dalmatian is the symbol of Coach, the brand. And it was meant to be a guard dog running underneath a carriage. So it's purely a status symbol. It's like, look how much money I have that my carriage that I only use when I leave my mansion every so often has its own guard dog. That's all it's bred to do is look cool and look intimidating. So then they're overbred. They're almost always deaf. I know as many Dalmatians that are deaf that can hear,
Same.
Yeah.
Interesting.
How come they are typically used as the fire department gimmick dogs?
Oh, boy.
Oh, I know that answer.
No, I mean,
I know that one. It's because of the overbreeding. So many were born deaf, and so they can't get hearing damage from the sirens.
That actually kind of makes sense in a weird way.
I didn't know that there were so many deaf ones out there. We only see a couple that come in.
Yeah. And the black and white spots is part of the reason they became overbred.
Really?
Is they didn't always look like, they were not always black and white spotted. It's a recessive trait, and that's where the inbreeding led to.
That makes sense. Breeding mutations to mutations to get a look, and that is how you get these problems. We were just talking about that on our episode.
It makes brain down.
Because, people want a specific look. At my clinic, there are a lot of Frenchies. But of course, as we were talking about, like, that's the number one most popular breed right now. There's Piebald, and there's Merle, and there's Dapple. And I'm looking at these dogs going, you're not supposed to be these colors. But we have some that are silver. We have some that are lilac. We have some that are seal point. And they're beautiful looking dogs, but they come with a number of skin, ear, eye, breathing issues, of course. Like, these issues are so much worse because, people want this beautiful color, so they breed the recessive alleles. It's destroying the breeds.
If you're getting anything brachiocephalic, and this is something that factors into what I do a lot, is when I see Frenchies, the last Frenchie I actually saw for aggression was, I want to say, 2 years ago. What it was microseizures, which again is not uncommon in Frenchies, but the only way they were able to diagnose it was, I want to say, they took it to LSU. And what got me thinking about that was the dog would act like it was running or moving in a dream, and they sent me a video of it. And then the first thing the dog does when it woke up, you could tell it was discombobulated, and then it found the first person that moved and attacked them.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, this is weird. There's a medical issue that's motivating this behavior.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, super chill dog. I mean, he would sit in my lap on his back and let me rub his belly. So again, a lot of times when you're seeing aggression issues, especially in purebreds, but in any dog really, you need to rule out health issues.
Good point.
And when I send a dog to the vet for that, I'm surprised sometimes because some vets will be like, well, what are you looking for? I'm not looking for anything.
Yeah.
I want a vet to do everything a vet would want to say there's nothing wrong with this dog. There was a study that came out at the beginning of 2023 that showed 83% of aggression issues in a case study of 400 dogs. 83% of dogs had an underlying undiagnosed pain. And when they were properly treated for that pain, the aggression issues went away.
Ooh, that makes sense.
I just recently consulted on a case, and I'm doing an online assessment. I'm watching this dog, and I'm seeing the dog, obviously, for aggression. And it feels like it's random biting, but then there's a consistent pattern of when the dog is either in a reclined position or is on their bed. The dog likes to bite, right? I'm watching him, and they have him in a sitting position. And as he stands up, I notice his back legs kind of tremble a little. And I'm like, okay. So what I want you to do is I want you to put him in a sit-stay, and I want you to walk really far away and release him and throw the ball. Took him 7 seconds to go from a sitting position to a standing position. And the whole time, the back legs are just trembling. And I recorded that and sent that to them. And I'm like, show that to your vet. If they could have gotten the dog in to see the vet and shown them that video, the vet would have been like, oh, well, this dog's clearly in pain. Something's happening on those back legs. The other thing is by time a lot of clients reach out for help, you know, we've bitten a couple of people. You know, we've talked to animal control 2 or 3 times by now. I'm usually the last stop. And a lot of times what I'm trying to do, I'm not just trying to help the dog. I'm often in a damage control position. And I have to not only look at what the dog has done and what's been done to the dog, but now I have to change people's mind and change their attitude. A lot of times we attribute aggression to maliciousness. That's not true. If you're not feeling well, you know,
I'll bite.
If you're sick, if you're in pain, I mean, I had to get a root canal last year. I had to wait 3 weeks to get a root canal. And I had this pain in my mouth that just would not go away. And I can't get anything besides ibuprofen over the counter for it. So put that on a dog who can't say, my mouth hurts, my hips hurt, you know, it's hard to stand or something. What is left to the dog besides, ouch, that hurts? I've been doing this for 10 years with dogs alone, and everything that I am learning about dogs is constantly changing. But it is a problem that we have as a culture where I have this dog that's biting. I don't read that dog very well. My dog bites my child. My dog bites someone who's not related to me. And now I'm in damage control. What they are hoping for is they're hoping for a miracle. And it's really hard to turn that around when it's that late in the game.
So instead of making it a last resort when behavior issues are starting to show, it's better to address them earlier than waiting to see how it progresses.
Yeah. And I tell people this all the time. I got a call. It's a German Shepherd puppy. He is like 4 months old. Now, you have both met German Shepherds.
Have one.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, you have one.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the extent of play biting in a German Shepherd? It's common.
Yeah.
Well, I get called in because the back of their legs are getting shredded. This dog is like 10 weeks old. And I come in and, you know, I'm wearing boots and jeans, right? I'm interacting with him. We're doing really well. I didn't even do an assessment because I didn't need to. This is a German Shepherd being a 10-week-old German Shepherd. It sucks because they have sharp little milk teeth, but it's a play behavior. If you were to engage him in play with tug of war or fetch or train him or get his mind doing something else, the biting went away. So is that aggression or is that the puppy being a puppy? Well, technically it is aggression. I mean, biting is an aggressive behavior, but it's within the realm of normal behavior for not only the breed, but for the age of the dog as well. If you are concerned that it's aggression, you get a puppy and you're like, wow, this puppy's biting me a lot. Like, call your vet, sure, but go ahead and talk to a trainer. And if you can hear the sound of my voice and the trainer tells you you need to establish yourself as the pack alpha or whatever, find you another trainer. Okay.
I love why you said that so much.
But go ahead and get help. Don't wait until the dog has bitten you, your wife, your kids, and your mother-in-law, and everything like that. Is when you call me and say, well, he's bitten 5 people, and if he bites somebody else, we have to euthanize him. Okay? He's bitten 5 people. I would have called after the first bite. You don't work with animals because you're looking to get rich. I'm not a dog trainer because I decided I'm going to be wealthy and train dogs. I am a dog trainer by accident. I'm going to advocate for the dog as much as I can. The next thing I usually tell clients is, look, there's something motivating this behavior. And if there's nothing truly motivating this behavior, you know, then it's a quality of life issue, right? Because I have to approach it kind of like a scientist. What's the data? Like, what's the objective? I will tell people, when you're describing a situation to, don't tell me emotions. Don't say, well, he was angry. Angry doesn't tell me what he did. Can dogs feel anger? Sure. I fully believe dogs can feel anger. But what is the objective? All mammals have cortisol. I think reptiles and even fish get cortisol. Cortisol coats your neural receptors. And one of the many things that it does is it prevents short-term memories from converting those into the long-term memory. So you go through a really stressful event, like your dog lunges at you. Your memory of that is not accurate because your brain was soaked in cortisol when that was happening. You're not going to retain anything that happened. So a lot of times when I'm talking to these clients, I'm asking the same question, just a slightly different way. Because what I'm trying to figure out, what's as most of the detailed of the picture as I can get before I say, okay, let's try to train, right? And when that person calls me, that phone call is as long as it needs to be. Because by the time you get to that point, you feel like you've exhausted all of your options. And this is the only thing that's left. And it's really not. A lot of times, there's a lot of stuff we can do in those cases. But a lot of times, those people are standing at an edge. And I don't envy them. Yeah, I understand where they're at.
I mean that.
It's not a fun conversation. It's never
fair. Do you guys think you're ready for a review?
Let's do it.
This review is for a book called Dog Training for Kids on Amazon. It looks pretty cute. It's a cute little book for kids. However, I have a 2-star review here from, any suggestions?
So it's just
Mickey. Okay. 2-star verified purchase from Mickey. My kids won't read it. I'm not sure shy, but all 3 of my kids won't read it. It upsets me. It sounds like our kids need the training and not the dogs.
I mean, can we take it aside real quick though? And talk about that, because this is relevant to what we're talking about. So, you know, your statistics earlier, dog bites towards children. I was all of maybe 6. I don't remember how old I was when I got my first dog bite from my Aunt Linda's dachshund named Ginger. She's obviously a red dachshund. So you give her the spicy name and everything. She bit me on the arm and I thought it was absolutely horrible and it was just minor abrasions. But what I did not do was I did not listen to my mother or my uncle or my aunt or my older cousin and say, don't corner the dog and try to pet her. And what did I do? Was I cornered the dog and tried to pet her. I'm not surprised. Why would you want a kid to read a dog training book if they're not interested in it?
Another one that I saw further along said that this book was too sophisticated for children. The person was like, as an adult, I don't even understand this book. So how's my kid supposed to understand it? So I didn't look too far into the actual book itself, but I just thought it was really funny that she has 3 kids and not a single one of them were interested in picking up this dog training book. They were like, nah, mom, like you train it. It's on you, girl.
I'm to this age now where I've never seen a child holding it. So they may not have known what it was. Maybe if they got them the ebook or something, or had it like a Roblox YouTube influencer or something along those lines. No, look, don't outsource your dog. I was that little kid who I loved all animals, and I don't remember any part of my childhood without a dog, but I was certainly not a dog trainer. I have met some great kids who took part in classes with me. Like, give the kid the clicker. The kid's doing better than the parents, right? But you don't outsource that to someone whose body is still being regulated by hormones.
I think it was bold of her to do the 2 stars and then just complain about her kids the whole review. That's not the book's fault.
Like, I've listened to your former episodes and it's like, sometimes it's like, I think this was a user error.
Yeah, I do believe that is it a lot of times. I do have another one for you guys just before we jump back into things.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
You guys are still frozen, but that's okay. I can hear you just fine, and you're clear, so I'm just going to go with that as a win.
I'm not frozen. I'm just moving incredibly slow.
Our next review is for a dog muzzle.
You have to do...
Oh, this is definitely a Donald review.
So this is for a dog muzzle, soft nylon, anti-biting, barking, chewing, air mesh, breathable, drinkable, adjustable loop.
This is a magic muzzle. Yep.
It's supposed to be able to drink through that.
Yeah.
You can't drink
through that. Well, 5-star review. So Donald really liked it. And it's called Could Not Bite the Groomer. So the groomer is probably really excited about this. And she says, she looks like Hannibal Lecter, but it does the job. She hates her nails cut and she will bite. So I ordered this and didn't make it really tight so she could still drink, bark, and eat. You know, just like the description. My dog is 10 pounds. I bought a small and it's perfect. Easy to clean, good material. She doesn't like it, but oh well, she didn't act like Cujo when she got her nails clipped. We wouldn't have to wear it.
Oh boy.
Yep.
There's so much I want to say here.
Hannibal dog.
Okay, let me start by saying you can train a dog to tolerate getting their nails trimmed, getting a bath, getting their ears cleaned, or whatever regular maintenance your dog requires. You can do that. Basket muzzles are so much better.
I love a good basket muzzle.
My standard poodle is trained to basket muzzle. I basket muzzle him because, A, I have to show it to clients. He loves shoving his nose in there. He knows he gets food, right? But a basket muzzle, they can drink water. They have almost full use of their jaws. And as long as you don't stick your fingers in the meat grinder, you know, you're good. Well, no, I mean, that's what, at that point, with that dog, that's what it is. It's a meat grinder. I get why vets use mesh muzzles because it's kind of a one use and everything. You know, it's on really quick, in and out kind of situation. You can train your dog to like a muzzle. And muzzling your dog saves you a lot of heartache. It's not a horrible thing to teach
him. I totally agree with that, Chet. And he has a little basket muzzle because he is really mean sometimes. Wait, it's...
You just got to respect the alpha. That's all it is. And it's just RTA.
He lives and breathes that motto. I'm telling you, he would have to do if I would allow him.
He does seem the type that asks for a tattoo.
He would just show up with one.
Oh, yeah.
When I got him from the rescue, the previous owner had written me a letter and she said that one of the things is that he's really mean for his nail trims. And so I was like, cool, bought a basket muzzle. So I started giving him pepperoni through it. And that's the only time he ever got pepperoni. He loves that muzzle. He gets really excited when it's time to put it on.
I mean, that's kind of like going to the doctor and getting Oreos with ice cream, you know? I don't like going to the doctor because every time I go to the doctor, they say something about my weight. But if she was giving me Oreos as she was saying something, it's a little counterintuitive at that point.
I get that. We have like some of the cases where the doctor mentions the dog weight as she's like feeding treat after treat. And you're like, oh, Mowdy, that's the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's... That tracks. Just invest in a good Baskerville makes a good brand. Just really a good rubber muzzle. And most of the time, you just stick them right in the dishwasher. It's great.
Oh, if you have about that, that's great idea.
Top rack only.
But, great advice. I like that she was roasting her dog. She was like, she looks like Hannibal in it. And also, if she didn't act like Cujo at the groomer, she wouldn't have to wear it. So she's like, it's her own fault.
It's better than the owners who are like, my dog bit somebody? Dog would never bite somebody.
As they're actively snapping at you.
Like, snarling. Yeah, like, it must be something you're doing wrong.
It always makes me feel like, oh, it's never snapped at anybody but me? Like, what I do? And I can't help but get inside my head sometimes. You can't help but sometimes be like, oh, man, this dog hates me.
I've had that happen a couple times as a trainer. There's this thing in behavior, which is called ritualized aggression. It's when... The dog has been in a similar situation so many times, and aggression has helped it get to where it needed to go. I worked with a Malinois mix. Anytime I went to the house, the dog would try to lunge at me, but we were seeing progress with like new people and everything. I feel like this is ritualized aggression. And so we met at a big soccer field, and the dog wasn't on a leash, and he covered a soccer field, and he was like, I was a Dukes of Hazzard. I slid over the hood of my Subaru and jumped into it, and the dog almost full force like going at. And the owner came over and snapped a leash on, walked away, and the dog turned it off. Whoa. So I called another trainer friend. I was like, hey, will you go do an assessment on this dog and just see what he's like? And the dog was fine with her. It was just me. Ritualized aggression is, it's just that one situation where, oh, well, I've used aggression in the past, but here's a new situation. I don't have to use aggression.
They attached the leash. I'm assuming by the more positive outcome of the story, because you're here, it was not a leash.
No, I have to the point, especially now that I've gotten older as a dog trainer, I've just gotten more confident. I'll just go ahead and throw away the retractable leash.
Just like, absolutely not.
Yeah, I had one person, I was like, can you hand me your leash? I handed me the retractable leash, dug the leash out of my training bag, and clipped it on the dog, and took the retractable leash off, and it back to the owner, said, that is in the garbage. And let's look, those are plastic gears in that leash. They are not metal. That is a metal wire, though, that is coated in what's supposed to be like weatherproofing material and everything. So your dog decides that it's going to go full-blown Cujo on somebody, it's going to strip those gears. And in the process of not only biting, you're going to get physically hurt if you hold on to that leash. If you're an owner listening to this, just go Google retractable leash injuries and see if that's something you want to do. It's gross. I don't recommend it if you're squeamish. But go ahead and just throw that away and get a regular 6-foot leash and use that. And the same goes for like those elastic jogging leashes. Don't put your dog on a rubber band, okay? You can get a hands-free leash.
Those are the worst. Because they look that they had a normal size leash, and then Echo looked confused, so I was going to explain it.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't picture what we're talking about.
So it's like a bungee cord that they turned into a leash for some reason. Yeah, it's wild.
Well, that's dumb. It is bushy.
But from said that,
elastic leashes are not any better than an extended leash.
They're very hard to control. And they're not like the retractable where if the retractable isn't working correctly, you can shorten the length. On those bungee cord leashes, you can't. Like, don't have any increased control. The dog is just going to bounce away from you.
It's ridiculous. It really is.
Next topic is the role that training plays in helping to prevent these more aggressive breeds from becoming aggressive, and the style of training, if that has an effect on the dog's behavior in the long run. Like dominance training, if that actually leads to more aggressive later on, or if the positivity training tends to make the dogs weak in the long run. And you have those people that are like, well, my dog won't protect me if I use the positive training. Any thoughts on that?
I'm literally writing a book.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I remember I got kicked out of a Facebook group for like dog owners here in the area back in 2016. I'm back in the group now, and I think they forgot who I was. I got kicked out for pushing an agenda for saying that positive reinforcement training is statistically proven to be better than using punishment during training. We have a couple of dozen studies. It's hard to do dog science because a lot of dog science rotates around owners making observations. And so there's obviously a bias there. With one exception, every paper that has been published in the past 15 years, at least, has said that positive reinforcement is statistically better, and not by a small amount, by a huge amount, better for teaching a new behavior. I remember hearing stories about my grandfather's hunting beagles, and he could recall these dogs from up to 2 miles away with just a whistle. How is that working? What is motivating those dogs to go back to my grandfather? This goes back to a cultural thing. Is positive reinforcement is how we first domesticated dogs. If it's 20,000 years ago, we're huddled over a mammoth kill and we see some wolves that come up and they're like, hey, we want some of your mammoths. What was that first encounter like? You know, it's positive reinforcement. So when you think about that, positive reinforcement is the best way to do this. So there's been the only reason I'm going to reference this is because it did make its rounds in the dog world. There was a paper that came out last fall that had a notorious shock collar trainer attached to it. And anybody who read the paper ripped the science apart because they were like, positive reinforcement didn't stop a dog's prey drive. Everybody who read that paper, from scientists to trainers to behaviorists, were like, you didn't do it right. you science wrong, you got a false result. Positive reinforcement training, if you don't know what clicker training is a much more effective way of teaching over just positive reinforcement. And you start the dog as soon as you get the dog, whether that's a puppy at 8 weeks old or a senior at 8 years old. Start as soon as you get the dog.
So the type of training does matter.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
With positive only, if you have a smart dog, like your border collie, or you have a dog that is bred to make independent decisions, you know, the quick mind kind of dog. When you are trying to establish boundaries and limitations, how do you handle when you need to make a correction when you're using positive only?
So I'm really glad you brought this up because I broke my golden rule when I brought Barley into the house, because I brought Barley in at the beginning of November. And I always tell clients, it's always a bad idea to get a puppy around the holidays.
Right.
But it's like, I'm a professional dog trainer. I can handle this. And by the end of the season, all of the ornaments had moved all to the top of the tray. And like, two strands of lights didn't work because puppy's gonna pop. Right. Now this year, at a year old, the tree made it. All the decorations have made it. So when you're talking about how do I correct problem, if you go to dominance theory, just as a quick aside, it was never intended for the dog training world. It was only intended for studying what rules. And within, I want to say, the 10 years, David Meach was the biologist who was the headliner on that paper. And I want to say it's within 10 years, he recanted everything. He literally said, we got it all wrong. This man deserves like a medal because he has spent the rest of his professional career disentangling the dog training world from the world of studying wolves, specifically when it came to dominance behavior. No one uses the word alpha anymore in when it comes to wolf behavior now. How do you do this? Well, if you're thinking in life, I'm a mama dog, and how am I going to stop my puppy? I'm going to bite it on the neck. Well, no. Mom's going to do a lot of other things before that, including using body language, including using vocalizations at a subsonic frequency that we can't hear, and then moving the puppy. I cannot say, well, I can do this like a mama dog. I can't bite. I can't flatten my ears. I can't snarl my lips. I can't growl. I don't have a tail that I can position. So I have no way to tell my dog no in a way that a well-socialized dog would understand. There was one dog trainer, and I cannot remember who it was, but her method, when she goes into a client's house and they say, I want my dog to stop doing X, she asks, what would be the ideal conditions under which your dog could do X, right? So I don't want my dog to get the Christmas turkey because it's full of bones. What would be the best way for your dog to do that? Well, the best way to say no is to never have to say no. Preventative care is a thing in veterinary practices. Preventative behavior is a thing in dog training practices. I have two 50-pound dogs, both of whom, when they stand up on their hind legs, are at my chest at least. Neither one have ever learned counter-surfing. How did I do that? I did behaviors in the kitchen. That look, we're in the kitchen. We're doing a down. We're doing a sit. We're doing a stay. We're doing whatever. These are the behaviors that happen in the kitchen. I don't have to say no, don't counter-surf. Because I already said, yes, when you're in the kitchen, to do all of these wonderful things. And if you do these wonderful things, it'll rain treats. From a behavior perspective, we do preventative care. It's no different than raising your kids and saying, don't get in a van with strangers. Don't take candy from strange people, whatever. Preventative behavior is what dog training is about. I don't have to say no if I can give my dog a million other things to say yes to.
So is that, would like, if you don't want them to eat your shoes, so you keep your shoes put up somewhere where they can't get to them, is that a preventative behavior?
So that's managing your environment. And that is a perfectly reasonable strategy. When you don't have the time or you don't have the knowledge or whatever, your dog can't chew your shoes if they can't get to your shoes. Okay, let's talk about Barley for a sec. He used to have this really bad habit. He likes sleeping on my flip-flops. I'm flat-footed as a dog. I'm never not wearing some kind of shoe. I will sit in the living room and he will be walking through the living room with one of my flip-flops in his mouth. And I'll go, Barley, drop it. He drops it and just keeps on.
Can I ask you a question about Chetney? So Chetney's 14. I got him a year ago. We've been working with him a lot on socializing. He is never off of a 4-foot leash when we're around other people. And I walk around my clinic
And people are like, oh, Chadney. And I say, don't trust him. And to the best of my knowledge, I have never had him bite anybody at work. There is one technician, if she is in the room, even if he can hear her voice, he is growling and snapping. If he's in his kennel and she walks in the room, he's lunging at the bars. Like, he hates her. She's never done anything to him. We manage it. We put the towel in front of the kennel. If she needs to go into the room to get something, I'll go instead. I don't want to ever put her in a situation where he hurts her, but she wants to become friends with him and he's having none of it. Is there any advice that you have kind of off the top of your dome?
Mysteriously disappeared.
But I was dying about the mysterious what is it called? The mystery
variable. Okay, so the first thing you have to do is isolate the triggers. Isolating a trigger can be difficult because you might think about visual triggers. You're maybe not thinking about like audio triggers, because we are a species that is so accustomed to noise. We don't hear the way our dogs hear. What I would do, we know that there's an audio trigger. If he can hear her voice, that's one thing. The next thing is like scent. Is it scent perceived? I would take like something of hers that smells like her. The best thing to do is a sock and let him smell the sock. See if he has a similar reaction. Let's say we identify the trigger and it's seeing her and or hearing her. I'm going to pick where he's the least reactive. Is he least reactive when he sees her, or least reactive when he just hears her? Then what I want to do is I want to condition an alternative response. So this is called conditioned emotional responses, CER, you know, super tech, right? Techie language there. Typically what I do is I start with mat work, where I give the dog a defined safe space without introducing the trigger. I attach to that location calm behavior. Anytime the mat's there, the dog, without a cue, goes and lays down on it. Then I slowly introduce it. The idea there is, by slowly raising the exposure, you can condition a calmer response over time. This is the fun part of being a behavior specialist, is I can't tell you for certain. I could do an assessment on Chet and be like, all right, well, I can't tell you for certain what's triggering the behavior, right? But there's also things like, it could be the environment. If he were to meet her outside of the environment, would it be different?
Would not. She came over to my house for a bonfire.
It could be something about how she speaks. It could be about how she comports herself around him. And it could be ritualized aggression. Identifying triggers is really hard, because I can't look at a dog and be like, all right, what about this situation for sure?
And I can't tell you. Gosh, lying things would be easier if they could just tell you.
I'd be out of a job if dogs could speak. If you can manage that situation, then yeah, that's fine.
I have another review for that muzzle. This one is a one-star.
Yeah. We're working our way through the big five, so let's go with Goofy.
This is going to be a Goofy review, I'll tell you that. It is a one-star verified purchase. I should have listened to the one-star comments. I purchased this muzzle in hopes of peacefully clipping my Cheagle dog nails. This muzzle is very unsafe. My dog was out of it and in a rage in mere seconds. If my dog were larger, I might not be writing this review. Take heed and stay safe.
Deed. Yikes.
I can only assume Cheagle is a Chihuahua Beagle.
That was what I thought also.
That would be my assumption. It's a weird combination.
That is a weird combination.
What are your rules for putting a muzzle
on? If I am in a room, I have the clients do it, because the dogs are usually more receptive to them being around their face if they're already going to be the type that might bite. And I always have to start with skinny end on top, because one thing I've learned is most people do not know how to place a muzzle on properly.
Right.
Yeah.
My first instinct is she probably didn't put it on right in the first place.
Well, and then like the other thing is, and I see this a lot with like harnesses, is they don't want it to be too tight. Dogs have a very pronounced subcutaneous layer, and if the muzzle or the harness is not sitting almost flush with the frame, you're going to have a problem. That's probably what the issue was there. I'd chalk that up to user error.
I like to surprise them when they need a muzzle. I just hold it, let them sniff it, and I always let the owners know. I'm like, I'm going to surprise them, so don't you be surprised. And so, you know, you just stand there, you pet them. You talk to them like normal. I'm just going to stand here like this. That's when I see their body start to relax. Particularly with a lot of dogs, I feel like when their face is really tight, they are about to bite. So when their face kind of relaxes a little bit, that's when I go, you buckle it real fast, tighten it up.
I like surprises because if you give them the chance, particularly dogs that have had muzzles before.
Oh, yeah. They get smart.
Don't give them the chance.
This is something that I feel like gets a little like swept under the rug because, oh, I don't want to muzzle my dog. No, muzzle your dog. Teach your dog to be in a muzzle.
Yes.
It's no different than, well, I don't want to wear a seatbelt. It's uncomfortable. Dude, you got to wear a seatbelt. If you hold over, you're not wearing a seatbelt, you're going to get a ticket. I would rather be the one who puts the muzzle on. My dog knows the muzzle's coming on. My dog knows the muzzle is safe. And I know the muzzle is well fitted. It is so much easier if your dog goes, oh, I'm getting a muzzle now.
There's this big aversion to muzzles amongst pet owners. They're being mean when you muzzle them, or it makes the dog look like they're mean. And it's like, it keeps us all honest in the situation, you know?
Yeah.
As all
pretend. One of the doctors that we work with likes to say that no dog should have a record because they got scared for a second. Because that's all it takes is they get scared for a second, they bite, and then let's say you've got blood dripping down your hand. Like, that sucks.
That's my point with that. I would rather be just spared the embarrassment of being, oh, my dog bit somebody. And I know I have a reputation within the community here of being the aggression dog guy, and I'm the crazy dog dad. I would rather prevent someone going to the ER on my account and then talking to animal control by just having your dog trained to go into a muzzle. And it's the easiest thing in the world.
So easy. Oh, yeah.
It does not hurt them.
It does not hurt them. And if you get a basket muzzle, then it doesn't even put any pressure on their mouth at all. It's no different than wearing a hat or a jacket or anything.
No, I have a couple of the more popular breeds. I got this list from illegal dog breeds ranked around the world. I didn't make a list of the countries, just how many countries have outlawed these breeds. And do you guys think you can guess the number one outlawed breed across all the countries?
It's going to be like pit bullies or something.
It is pit bull. 49 countries have banned pit bull. The only number that comes close is a breed that I never even heard of, a Tosa Inus.
I've heard of the nose. I think they're Japanese mastiffs.
I put in TOS and it popped up Tosa Inus. Google's like, oh, he's looking for dogs again. Yeah, it's a massive.
And that is the second most banned at only 18 countries. So, you know, pit bulls are far more feared than even this Tosa.
And there's only 170 something countries in the world at this moment, anyway. And so to have 49 of them banned, like that is a third of what's 49 out of. Hold on, I mean to do some math.
I'm not doing that kind of
math. It's like. Like a quarter of the countries, give or take, around the world have said no.
I mean, I think the logic behind that is that is just, we all know there are three dog professionals here right now, and all of us have been bitten or tried to be bitten by a Chihuahua, a Yorkie, a whatever, more than we've died. A bull has made a play for us, you know. But that being said, you know, a Yorkie, a Chihuahua, a Dachshund, a Schnauzer, does not maim somebody. I feel like that's not super fair to the breed, because in almost all of these cases, it is bad owners who have led to the situation.
Poor breeding. I lived in Detroit for a few years, and there was a big fighting pit nearby. I worked at a low-cost vet clinic. We would have a lot of clientele with pit bulls from the city proper. There was a noticeable difference in how these dogs would interact with people and other dogs. I come down here in Florida, pit bulls, as a general term, seem to be very sweet, friendly, like dopey muscle puppy, but very different from my experience in the city.
Your chances of meeting a pit bull that has been bred specifically for aggression is exponentially low. Most of the time when you're seeing a quote-unquote pit bull, you're not seeing a purebred dog. You're seeing a dog
yes.
that has some bulldog in its ancestry somewhere. And we forget there's a study, and it was just one of those things where the science went gloriously right, but the reporting on it went gloriously wrong. It was a study that showed that in some cases, up to 40% of behavior was dictated by breed. But it wasn't the only factor that dictated behavior. So all of the reporting was like, oh, science shows breed doesn't matter. That's not what the science said. Yeah, 40% is less than 60%. That's true. That other 60% was broken up into socialization, early life experiences, health of the puppy, health of the dam, health of the lines going back, breed, health predispositions. Breed does play a big factor in what type of aggressive displays you can predict. I have been lunged at by many dogs, and I've been lunged at by a couple of pits, but I can't tell you the last time I dealt with an aggressive pit.
The next one on our list is Dobermans, which are banned in 11 countries.
I feel like the biggest sin that a Doberman commits is just like they don't remember how big or how strong they are, and they break everything. You know, I've never even been growled at by one.
I feel like the history of the breed is more working against it than the actual breed itself. Well, they were so popular in World War I that's what kind of works against it.
Then Tame Corso and Rotties are at a tie at banned in 9 countries. So one thing I saw that's in common in this list are they are big, muscular, intimidating looking breeds. But
yes,
as you mentioned before, because I also looked up at most likely to bite lists as well, and number one on all of those lists is typically the Chihuahua followed by Dachshund. So yeah, I mean, I 100% believe that I would be bit by this Chihuahua before the Pitbull, but that's not going to make it onto the list.
If you just a quick Google search, you have a device in your pocket, Google, like, what is an Australian Shepherd meant to do? And you go, oh, it's a cattle dog. I live in an apartment complex. I'm in the military, so I never know what my schedule's like, and I'm moving all the time. Don't get an Aussie.
So this is a product called Rocco and Roxy Puppy Potty Training Go Here Spray for dogs. They have a separate product called No Chew. So that is where this review actually comes from. It's the Chew one. And who's our next review from?
Let's say Daisy.
So Daisy left a 1-star verified purchase called Apparently Didn't Work. I have a Basset Hound puppy that is now 8 months old. He chews and eats everything. He ruined all my patio chairs. He eats socks and chews on the other dog's ears. I bought this to deter him. I sprayed it on the patio chairs. I sprayed it on the dog's ears. I guess I left the product in the backyard and he got it. He chewed it up and ate the spray cap. I hope he poops or throws that up or it's another visit to the vet. Apparently, it doesn't work that well because the bottle is completely empty. And here is the chewed bottle of No Chew. It feels like the opposite of what a No Chew product should do.
Yeah, we had bought the house that we're in right now. We had this lemon tree. We were really excited about this lemon tree. It gave us a lot of lemons. And I kid you not, Christoph had one big, ripe, beautiful yellow lemon in his mouth. And he is just biting down and lemon juice is just pouring out of his mouth and all over his little poodle beard. And I was like, well, that proves a couple of things right there.
Is that what they're supposed to be like?
Well, a lot of times.
Is that what the no-goose sprays are?
Sometimes it'll have things like cinnamon or clove, or pretty much if you would put it into either a baked good or into a mixed drink to enhance the flavor, that's usually what they use. Chewing is what's called a displacement behavior. So chewing is something that all canines do as both a way to maintain their health on their teeth and to calm themselves. Their sense of smell is way different than our sense of smell. And they can even detect particles in the air that are effectively scentless. So something that to us has no scent, to a dog has a scent. So when you think about that, a spray, whatever you, a chewing deterrent is not going to work. I mean, look, dogs eat poop. It has to taste better than what it smells like to us. You're not going to deter a dog with a spray from chewing on something. You're going to deter a dog from chewing on things that's not supposed to by giving them something they like better for modifying or managing the environment. I would like to tell this person with a Basset Hound, your Basset probably grew out of it. I've never met a Basset that was a super heavy chewer. And I've also never met a Basset who wasn't anything more than a dog-shaped spot on its house. But chewing is something all dogs do, and you have to give that dog...
Apparently not spray bottles.
Yes.
Preferably not spray bottles, shoes, clothing. They're going to go to your dirty hamper because, well, it's good to them. Collagen shoes are perfectly safe. I don't like using bully sticks or anything like that. My border collie loves pumpkins. I just cut the stem off. When he breaks the stem, a little stem comes off, and he's using the pumpkin until he gets down to the thins, and then I just go smash the pumpkin out the backyard, use it for mulch. That's a perfectly safe thing. Sweet potatoes.
Are you giving the sweet potatoes raw, or are they cooked?
Carrots. Peel them, like peel them and give them to them raw. And you might want to like cut it a little so it's not huge, but a sweet potato.
I'll try that.
It's like, horrible for your dog.
My shepherd, Samantha, she loves the CT chews, the little soft raw hide, but they're expensive. So I only give her, you know, one or two a week. But like, how expensive is a sweet potato? A few cents?
You know, we keep our potatoes in a little basket underneath a drawer in our kitchen. And it's a pleasant surprise when the dog brings me a sweet potato. I'm like, all right, buddy, I'm going to wash it off. We went to a pumpkin patch with barley and let it pick up.
Yeah.
If you don't give your dog something to chew on, if you don't give your dog something to rip apart, they're going to find something to rip apart, and they're going to be the best at ripping that apart.
Yeah.
So some takeaways that I got from our time today is that intervention with training as early as possible is the best answer, that aggression does not necessarily get related to a particular any dog can bite, and positive training is best. Did I miss some points that we can sum up here at the end?
And pumpkins.
And pumpkins.
What I will tell you is do not wait to get help. Well, Fluffy growls at me whenever I approach him and he's laying on his bed. What should I do? Call a dog trainer. And I said this at the start of the show. If the dog trainer says you just got to establish yourself as the alpha, call a different dog trainer. Okay? You're never going to be able to prepare for everything. This is a living, evolving relationship as two species that are cohabitating and on the individual level. I learned some things from Kristoff. I did some things with Barley better than I did with Kristoff. I did things with Kristoff better than I did things with Flynn. That is how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to keep going and learning with us. And training doesn't stop. It keeps going after you're done. I'm a sole proprietorship. I don't have the facility. I go to the owner's homes, mainly because most of the time when you're dealing with an aggression case, it's happening in or around the home. I'm a one-man act. I am my own accountant, secretary, all of that. But my office Christmas parties are great because I love my two coworkers. They will literally just work for treats. That's what my wife and I were joking about. Her office Christmas party is radically different than my office Christmas party. So I can show up to my office Christmas party in PJs and house shoes.
No, I'm physically there. No, no, don't judge that, ma'am.
This will be, I guess, my sign-off thing. Training is the same. Doesn't matter what behavior you're modifying. It's the same process. The parts are interchangeable. Every animal learns the same way. It changes a little bit by what we're teaching. It's no different teaching a dog to accept eye drops than it is to accept a nail trim than it is to lie down on cue. It's the same formula.
If our listeners wanted to find you, want to plug your social medias?
Looking for me on any social media, it's under Concerned Canines. That is canines spelled out. That's C-A-N-I-N-E-S. Except on Instagram, where it's Concerned, the letter K and the number 9. You can find me at concernedcanines.com. That'll link you to all the stuff. Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm also on YouTube. My YouTube channel, Concerned Canines. You'll be able to see all of my training video pictures and videos of Barley and Kristoff. And I will work with clients all over the country. I can help you with your problem.
There is hope out there. Train your dogs. All right, you guys. Well, that was a thumbs up from Echo. So you guys know how to find Ben if you need him. I highly encourage you reach out. You know how to find us. Our social medias will be in the show notes. Stick around for our AI-generated song. Otherwise, we'll catch you in our next episode.
Down by the park and the old willow tree, a man named Ben with a heart full of glee. He's speaking softly to the anxious and wild, concerned canines. He's training the mild. Whispers of praise and treats in his hand, guiding the pack through commands that they'll understand. With patience and calm, he shows them the way. Ben the trainer, making safe strides each day. Socializing tail waggers, calming bark, turning fear in friendship, lighting up the dark. Pause. walls of trust, they find the light. Ben's gentle touch makes it all right. In yards and in homes where shadows may roam, aggression fades as they learn a new tone. Anxiety ebbs with each wag of the tail. Bends the whisper in their fragile wail. Kindness his tool and love his reward. Each furred friend he softly implored. From snarls to smiles, they venture on through. Guided by Ben's lessons, tender and true. Patience born from a care. Spoken, ending the hearts that once were broken.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Patience born from a caring soul bends the light that makes the fracture.